Hello, my name is Mary Catherine Dybel. I can't believe it, 70 years old. Today's date is Wednesday, March 3rd, 2021. I'm speaking from my home in Arlington, Massachusetts, and I'm going to be speaking to David Waters, who's one of my best friends and who owns who is executive director of and CEO of Community Servings.
And I'm David Waters. I am 61. Today's date is Wednesday, March 3rd, 2021. I'm speaking to you from our offices at Community Servings in Boston, Massachusetts. And I'm speaking with Mary Catherine Dybel, who is a longtime close friend and business colleague. Mary Catherine, I was thinking as I was preparing for this, that we've known each other almost 40 years, at least 38, I think. Isn't that incredible?
It is amazing. But on the other hand, I think of my life as starting when I came to Boston, and I've known you almost since that period of time. It was a funny meeting because I had a roommate who worked at American Repertory Theater, and you were there as a sort of fledgling newbie. I'm not even sure what you were doing. You were stage managing, I guess. And the funny thing was, you had to stage manage a play at the first floor of a space called the Hasty Pudding Club, where we had a restaurant called Upstairs at the Pudding. And we were upstairs from in a very old building from what was a very old stage. And when you were producing a Beckett play, we had a dishwasher leak, and I remember to this day that in that very sparse play that there was the bling, bling, bling of little dishwasher droppings that accented that Beckett play. And I remember you coming up very earnestly and saying, trying to be calm and saying, you know, we really have this production up and we really need to do something. So that was our first meeting, and I think it's pretty funny because in a way, we've been solving crises together one way or the other ever since for 40 years.
And laughing a lot along the way. So from just to give a quick level set. So from that point, I ended up coming to work for you and in the restaurant and became the general manager several years later.
And he solved the leak.
And we did. So we did finally solve that.
Once he was on board. Yeah.
Upstairs of the Pudding was such a classic 4-star Northern Italian restaurant in the middle of Harvard Square in the historic Hasty Pudding Club building. And I was lucky enough to work for you for 10 years before I came over to Community Servings, which we can talk more about in a minute. But I have such fond memories of the pudding. And just to give a sense of our deep personal relationship, I got to give you away at your wedding, and you got to officiate at my wedding, which
exactly.
Is pretty awesome.
Well, you know, I thought it was funny because when David came on board, we had already been in business for, you know, probably 8 or 9 years or something at that point. And I love to say that David actually taught us how to do an effective meeting because his executive function is so good. And he actually taught me a lot about how to run a business, how to be a good and effective business owner, even though we were the ones who owned the business. And we also had a mutual interest in events and running events. And what I remember is David, we had a little office at the top of the stairs in this very antique building. And David, as part of his job, was the board chair of Community Servings as it existed at that point, which David could tell you a little bit more about what it was. And we could both talk about what it evolved to. But at that point, he was chair of the board and thinking up ways to raise money, and devised right there at Upstairs at the Pudding, Pie in the Sky and Lifesaver. And I just was amazed at his degree of organization in putting this together. And again, I strove to have that degree of organization as I went on to bigger and bigger events in my restaurant career.
One of the things I wanted to talk about, Mary Catherine, is I think we both have a slightly over-the-top passion for entertaining and parties and hospitality, both in the restaurant business, in the fundraising world, in our personal lives. I think of you as sort of the epitome of the most gracious host, almost out of another era. Always making
in fact,
everyone
I am out of another era.
And I wondered, you know, tell me a little bit about what drew you originally to hospitality and parties and being such a beautiful host.
Well, it's funny. I think about that myself, David, and I think the two of us share that delight in entertaining and taking care of people and having people be in our homes and feed them and talk to them. I guess I got that from my parents because I used to love the atmosphere in our house before my parents gave a party. When everything seems to change, everything got festive, everything got beautiful. There was lots of cleaning, cooking leading up to the event. And it was always seemed like a holiday to me. And I have this picture of myself from one Sunday night when I remember my cousins were over. And there's a picture of me in a little shirtwaist dress, passing hors d'oeuvres, which at that point were like Ritz crackers or something, passing hors d'oeuvres to everybody. So from the very earliest times, I loved not only home entertaining, but also going to restaurants. And if you remember, this is in the 50s, and restaurants were not the thing that they are today. It was sort of Howard Johnson, which was actually considered a really, you know, kind of fine dining experience in a way. And we used to love that on our various family trips. But, I think to tell you the truth, both you and I have a little thing called the hospitality gene. And I'm not even sure it was necessarily fostered by my parents as that I was born with it. And I really have framed my existence around the idea of hospitality. And I think you're the same way.
Yeah, I think we're both, nurturers and caregivers in some way. But I chuckle at that image of you as the little girl, because I have the exact same memory as a little boy. My mother would throw cocktail parties. She was a single mom, and she would throw big cocktail parties. And to me, it was a holiday, but it was also, I've always thought of parties as being kind of theatrical, where you create an environment and it's this magic place for a short time. But I used to sneak down the back staircase into the kitchen when she was throwing parties. And I had a taste for, fine food because I would enjoy sneaking all of these hors d'oeuvres. And I can vividly remember my mother saying, well, at least pass them first. So there I am as an 8, 9, 10-year-old going around from one serious adult conversation to another with a platter of hors d'oeuvres. And it became so much a part of my being that the other adults started hiring me to work their parties, passing hors d'oeuvres at their parties. And from that, I got into the catering business and the restaurant business and got to work with you, but also just really love the idea of having people in my home, of a beautiful space, a welcoming space, you know, slightly over the top and theatrical perhaps. Lucky for me, I married a very talented chef, so I can always count on him, my husband Jim, to make sure that there's a gorgeous, lavish spread of food, much like you do at your house.
Well, I have to say the best compliment I ever got, I got from Jim after a small Christmas dinner party that I gave, and he said, He didn't actually say it to me. I think he said it to you, and you reported it to me. Somehow when he came into the house, he just felt this sort of warmth and happiness. The way I had put everything together, such that it was what you all were striving to striving to do in your own parties, which I have to say are also over the top and wonderful. I think of your garden party and how it's become, first of all, too big to do in your incredible garden anymore, which makes me sad. But on the other hand, it makes me very happy that we're doing the garden party at the beautiful new community servings building with an extended, allowing us to extend our hospitality to even more people, because now you have so many donors and so many people who are important to the organization. So,
you know, MC, I was thinking also around hospitality is the whole idea of food, and food is the great connector. Think of both of our work in the food world as really about, the love and the care that comes from providing people with food, whether they're people we know or people we don't know, but also that food is so important in every culture. This, you know, whether it's the images of chicken soup for those who are sick and what that means in different cultures, or just our joy of bringing foods from our cultures and learning about other cultures, whether it's, you know, Indian food or Asian food or whatever. But how do you think about food in that way?
Absolutely. I so believe in the groaning board, as you could say. In other words, a feeling of amplitude and plenty. And I think that that's something that Community Servings has been great about imbuing. It's you know, for one thing, you call the people that you serve clients, as versus, underserved people or whatever the many things that you could call them. But absolutely. I mean, I really do think of food as the thing that brings people together. And that's why restaurants are so fun. I mean, how many people can have a bad time when they're sitting down with loved ones or even people they don't know and enjoying a beautiful meal? And so I think of some of the early meetings of community servings that often were at the restaurant because you and I were working. And so that was a way to have a committee meeting and be able to participate, but not necessarily, you know, have to go out of the building. And so we had another private party room with a fireplace. And I just remember those sort of meetings of being times of hilarity. I'm not sure how much we got done, but I think we did get enough done so that the events came off. But just sitting by the fire and having the upstairs at the pudding pizzettas, the endless pizzettas and fried oysters, and cooking up ideas for the development committee, for the, you know, for any number of board committees that used to meet there, but especially for Lifesaver and Pie on the Sky. I think we were the place that, we had very high attendance rates at those committee meetings because people knew that they would get good food and good cheer. So yeah, food. I mean, I've always said that about every board that I'm ever on or any committee meeting in my present job. I always make sure to go to, you know, cookie time or some great place and have some little something to reward people for the fact that they're volunteering. And I know at community servings, wow, the spread that you put on for community lunches, for staff lunches, and for your volunteers is fantastic. And again, it's a symbol of how you treat your clients as well, is that you believe in providing for them and welcoming them into your building with food.
Let's jump back for a second. So when I was working with you in the restaurant business, was in the late 80s and 90s, and it was also the height of the AIDS epidemic. One of the things that I always thought was powerful was how much the AIDS epidemic, most people wouldn't think of this, but how much the AIDS epidemic impacted the restaurant community and the hospitality community, because there were so many people who were sick. And it resonates with today when we're living through the COVID pandemic. But you were talking about community servings, which really grew out of both the hospitality community and the very scary, tragic period of the height of the AIDS epidemic, particularly in the gay community. And I was a young gay guy who was very scared of dying of AIDS and was watching friends pass away and acquaintances, and didn't really know how to cope with it. I remember at the restaurant, we got a call to come to a meeting at another great restaurant, Maison Robert, in the old Boston City Hall. And it was a lovely French couple, Madame Robert, who invited us to a meeting of restaurateurs to talk about starting a feeding program for people with AIDS. And what I think is fascinating about that period is that most people today don't understand that in the early years of the AIDS epidemic, the majority of people actually died of malnutrition. They were starving to death because their body was trying to fight off the enemy virus, and it was burning all their lean body mass. So in those days, it was oftentimes young men, and they were losing 30 to 40 pounds of lean body mass in a very short time. But the coincidental, there were no drugs yet invented. AZT and the drug cocktails for HIV hadn't come along. So food was really the only answer. And if you loved somebody who was sick and dying, feeding them was the best way to perhaps prolong their life for a few more weeks or months while we, desperately hoped for a cure. And so that meeting at Maison Robert was all about starting a program with the support of the restaurateurs and fabulous chefs to feed people who were very isolated and very scared, but very sick in originally two neighborhoods of Boston, Roxbury and Dorchester. And of course, the program has grown, and we can talk more about that. But
I think the way the
restaurant stepped up is so important.
Absolutely. I think restaurants thought of it as their cause. I mean, restaurants were so seminal in the early days of community serving. And I think that restaurants have always espoused causes that feed hungry people, underserved people, but community servings that brought the two things together. The fact that many people in our community are direct family of, and because every restaurant really becomes like a surrogate family, and you are family when you're in a restaurant, with all of the trappings, all the dysfunction and the joy of a family. And so people were inordinately affected by that because of the number of gay people involved, who were attracted to restaurant life. But community servings very soon found out that it wasn't just gay people. It was, in fact, a lot of people in poor communities, and that these people not only couldn't feed themselves, but could not feed their families. And so it was a very important tenet, and something that we as board members held close to our hearts, is the fact that we didn't just feed individuals, we fed individuals and their families. And we took into account the fact that people had children and people had spouses and people had caretakers. And it meant the difference between social services taking kids away from people is whether they could feed their family or not. So it was such an important thing. And I think it totally resonated with all of us in the restaurant business. And you really got a lot of participation from all the restaurants. And that did form the basis of the two major fundraisers that have sustained community servings for all these years. And I think restaurants are very proud of community servings also. And as is seen by the number of people on your board and the number of people who continue to participate in both of your fundraisers. It's a tribute to the agency, I think.
When we were founded, as you said, it happened to coincide with the AIDS epidemic moving beyond the gay community or LGBTQ community into communities of color and low-income communities and straight communities. And so there were so many families coping with it where a parent was sick or dying and what was going to happen to those children. One of the things I love about community servings over the years is that it has stayed focused on feeding people who are sick, but the tent keeps getting bigger because yes. Whether it's the gay community or communities of color for HIV, But ultimately, women with breast cancer, people with congestive heart failure, seniors with advanced diabetes or kidney failure, we collectively, you know, it's the community serving the community is what I often say. And we just keep making that family, that community bigger, and feeding more people. What I also love as a food professional, and again, it goes, we can talk about this, it goes back to hospitality, is that one of the first things we learned was that sick people have no appetite. So if you bring them mediocre food, and Community Servings now feeds 1,500 people a day, but if you bring them institutional food, which is what you might think of as a large-scale free feeding program, they're not going to eat it. So much like a fine restaurant or a passionate restaurant, you have to find ways to motivate people to eat. And so that starts with beautiful food and whole ingredients, local farm produce and purchasing, but really cooking the way our grandparents cooked, you know, homemade soup stocks, everything from scratch. And I always think of that as a sign of respect. And caring that much like we do in all of our entertaining is that the food is a gift. And it's so heartwarming to me as a host to be giving that food to a guest in my home or a guest in your restaurant, but even more so for people who are sick and maybe end of life and feel like the world has forgotten them and how isolated they are while their health is declining. And to know that our driver shows up with that beautiful food is so powerful.
Also, one of my favorite images, and I've now been through three buildings with you, you know, from your first place in the South End to the second place in the sort of the South End, and then, Jamaica Plain, and now into this beautiful building further over in Jamaica, or same place in Jamaica Plains. But what I do remember is when we did move into the building in Jamaica Plains, of you right there planting the chives, planting the thyme, you yourself bringing flowers and planting them and making that personal effort to put in a garden that then we could use. You also forged relationships with farmers such that you did have the ability in season to have literally farm-grown vegetables and things. And that's kind of unheard of in institutional cooking. I don't think there's very much that's institutional about community servings cookings, except for the fact that you're extremely efficient at packaging and getting it out, getting it to people. And that too has seen its evolution, you know, the decision to freeze at certain points, decision to send meals so that you can extend your reach. So it's, for me, it's been very interesting to see the progress of community servings over the years, from a very small kernel of an idea to a fleshed out agency that could serve more and more people, to the board's discontent with the fact that we had a waiting list and constantly striving with our strategic plans to find a way to feed more people and to feed them better. And then into something that I wouldn't have necessarily been as interested in, but that you really love, which is just this whole idea of nutrition and how nutrition, good nutrition and good food can keep people out of the hospital. So basically food as medicine. And that's taken to the agency in a whole different direction, and not a different direction, but an expanded kind of viewpoint where it's, you know, you're doing research and proving to health providers that community servings meals should be prescribed just like a medicine. And that's been fascinating for me to watch, because I'm always fascinated when I think that somebody's doing something that I wouldn't know how to do. You know, I know how to cook, I know how to entertain, but I don't know how to go, you know, sort of get this idea out in the way that you have through experts and nutritionists and whatever, to get the food out and to really disseminate that idea. And that's been fabulous, I think.
One of the things I often say is that we've invented a new field of using food in the context of healthcare. And oftentimes we think of food maybe, or healthy eating, as being a prevention tool. But the idea of actually using food for patients who are already sick and use it in partnership with Western medicine or prescription drugs and pharmaceuticals, but really thinking about what you're eating, how it impacts your diabetes, your congestive heart failure, your dialysis for kidney failure. And it's incredibly exciting. And we're seeing good response from health insurers and hospitals and physicians. And it's really a whole new field. But I also want to bring that back to the idea of hospitality, because I think that with that smart business or smart healthcare also comes that sense of caring for each other as human beings and recognizing for all of us when we love someone who's sick, very sick, that it will be the hardest thing we ever do to care for them. And, you know, many of us are blessed with privileges, you know, money and time and stable housing. But you start to strip those away and you say, what if I was caring for my spouse, my beloved mother or father, and I didn't have a stable place to live and I didn't have money and I couldn't take time off from work and I didn't know how to cook the right meal for them and I was worried about losing my kids. And you start to see the spiral. So using food as really the sign of respect and caring and for people we know and love, but also people that we can imagine knowing and loving, even though they're not part of our immediate circle. And I just love the idea that we can bring that same hospitality that you might have in your restaurant to knocking on strangers' doors and saying, hey, we see you're struggling and here's some beautiful food.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that the new building in some ways draws together all these different threads of what the agency is trying to do. Because first of all, as we got a little bit further away from being just an AIDS organization, we could talk to clients, the board and the donors and whatever, could meet clients and hear the impact of what they do. One of the most wonderful programs is the teaching kitchen, where people just out of, let's say, rehab or prison or who would face barriers to full-time employment are trained to be able to go into a restaurant or a, you know, large, any sort of large institutional kitchen and cook for a living. And these people who didn't even have a cell phone or a place to live end up with a full-time career. And that's another thing that Community Servings has done. And the reason that I was reminded of that is when I think of the grand opening and some of the parties that happened around there, we saw many of the students that have come through your program and who are now success stories coming back to ooh and ah over the new kitchen and the beautiful surroundings. Many of these people worked in our kitchen, in our restaurant, because they would graduate to restaurants like ours. And it was just so great to see some of these people that I'd seen down and out who are now success stories. But we got to talk to clients. We got to see some of the people who are the students, but we also saw that it was very, it made it possible for you to continue this food as medicine strain. And in fact, boy, it was good timing, because guess what hit right after you moved in? Literally, well, I forget when it was a cold January day, I think, when the grand opening, and that late February, the pandemic struck, and you were finally poised with this new kitchen, a lot more resources to be able to feed many people. And I know the pandemic was a great opportunity in a way to see how fast and how well you could ramp up, because you were feeding a lot of people during this pandemic, especially at the beginning, I think, right?
Right, absolutely. So we were so lucky that we built our new kitchens and finished construction and fundraising just 2 months before the start of the COVID pandemic. I often refer to it as a food campus, where, you know, we're teaching people how to work in the food industry. We're teaching people how to eat healthy and cook properly through nutrition education. And then we're feeding people and doing research and doing outreach and advocacy. It's this wonderful everybody coming together in and to use food for good in the community. And in designing the new building, I really think of it as sort of a community center for food. And that, again, that idea of hospitality, you mentioned, you know, planting the herbs in the garden or bringing in flowers and things like that. But creating a safe and welcoming space for the community, for our employees, for the volunteers, for the clients, a place, you and I were talking about it earlier, you know, a place of conviviality and joy. We do very serious work when you think about providing complex medical diets for people who are sick and often dying. You know, it's palliative care. We're losing people all the time, but
yeah.
Built into that is the joy of doing it as a community, doing it as a group, sharing the joy of, you know, beautiful food and laughter and fine food and wine for fundraising purposes. But I really think it's somewhat unique in the nonprofit world to think about hospitality. Our staff is so focused on welcoming and hosting guests. We often joke that anybody who comes into our building asks me, did you give your staff a happy pill? Because everybody seems so happy when they're here. And I think it's really just that the work is so fulfilling. We try to do it with complete respect and expression of, you know, the diverse world that we live in and work with colleagues. But it all goes back to food. It's about that sense of love and caring that food represents for all of us, no matter what our life experience has been.
Well, I think that's so true of that building, the way it was designed. And, you know, if you hadn't been in this particular field, I think you would have been an architect or a designer, because you designed several kitchens for us, I think, and you certainly were seminal in the designing of this building. But the building is a happy place. You come up and there are, you know, beautiful gardens just as you approach the building, and it's all light, and there's a great big communal room. Oftentimes the food is laid out along one side, so it's sort of it becomes almost like a living room, your living room. You know, it was designed to be a happy place. And in fact, yeah, anybody who's there, they better be happy in a way, knowing you as a boss, because in a way they don't belong there if they don't have, as I say, the hospitality gene. They need to, you know, approach it with seriousness, the seriousness of basically saving people or at least making their dying weeks well fed. But at the same time, so it's serious work that you're doing, but you sure have better find a way to have a happy time doing it, and to do it with graciousness and the kind of care that you would do if you entertain people in your home. It's really it's not all that different. So
now you went from being a restaurant supporter to being a board member to being, you know, a board leader and one of our greatest advocates in the community in general. We're both at a time out of our lives where we're starting to think about our legacy and what we leave behind. What would you say are you know, in terms of your work with community servings, what are the things you're most proud of?
I would say my participation in and helping with the Teaching Kitchen segment of your mission, because when I was a restaurant owner, I could easily take some of those people and continue the mentoring that started at Community Servings and help them to navigate the world of the kitchen in a way that would make them a professional that could go on to other, maybe less forgiving kitchens. So we really love that. And I love the fact that now when I'm doing development work at Cambridge Center for Adult Education, that we hope to start this as soon as our kitchen reopens and yours does, that we host your Teaching Kitchen members every 6 weeks or 8 weeks to have a class in world cuisine. So this is something that a lot of these people have never gone to a Thai restaurant, let's say, or tasted Spanish paella. So they come in and not only get to taste it, but they get to talk to somebody who's from that country making his or her own cultural cuisine. And they are blown away. They really love it. And it's a little field trip for them. So we get them to get on the subway and come from Jamaica Plain to Cambridge to Harvard Square, and they make a day of it and really have a good time. So I love the fact that outside of being a board member, there are other ways that I can contribute in real and concrete ways. So I would like to think that that's the case. But I also enjoy, even though I missed the first meeting, I will enjoy my work with the Board of Visitors, because that's something that's now reinfused with life, and that I think can be really an important contribution to life at community servings. It's made up of a lot of old friends, because along the way, David, you've made a lot of friends, and it's been, it has been a long time. What is the exact year now of community servings? I know you've been 25 years at least, right?
30. Well, you and I were, at that first meeting 31 years ago.
Was it 31?
And I've been working here as of next month, 25 years.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a labor of love. And one of the things that I enjoy most beyond just food is meeting people from different life experiences, different cultures. Many of my coworkers came out of criminal justice, and meaning that they did time. That wasn't my life experience, but I so admire what they've accomplished because they had so many barriers put in front of them, and oftentimes completely unfair and unjustified barriers. And yet to see them still be loving, caring people who want to do good in the community, even though they may have struggled in their past or faced injustices. I feel so blessed to have come from a fairly, to use a food image, a fairly white bread experience as a child into a world that is so multidimensional, and that food has given me an entree into so many different life experiences, and so many people that I admire that are similar to me and very different from me. And ultimately that we can do, it's a bit corny maybe, but that we can do good and feel like we leave the world a better place and care for people around us, but use food and hospitality to do it, which is, I'm so surprised 25-30 years later, I still get choked up when I think about it. So
I know, and as well you should, and kudos to you for being, really that person that 31 years ago stepped up and took responsibility and became, so involved, even though their gain was our loss because you left us to go be executive director. When I think of it, community servings is a place for second chances. And it's also a place of cultural diversity, every kind of diversity. But, we didn't even mention the fact that you take into account people's cultural backgrounds, because, of course, when people are sick, they want the food of their childhood. And so a lot of times the meals that go out are, can have rice and bean component, because that's the comfort food that people are used to. So I've learned a lot about different cultures' foods, as I have in the restaurant business, too. But the great thing about community servings is it is a place that welcomes everybody, and that people feel nurtured enough to feel that they can have a second chance. Part of having a second chance and being successful at it is having people around you who believe that you can do it. And that's maybe the most important thing community servings does for a lot of people, is to believe that they have another chance, whether they're home and sick, and that food will give them that chance, or whether they're in your teaching kitchen and think that they can actually have the wherewithal to go apply for a job at a steakhouse, you know, where the flame is high and the stakes are high. Forgive the pun. But anyway, it's a fabulous thing. And I think your legacy is going to be a lot longer lasting than mine in that regard. It's community service is an amazing thing. So proud to be involved.
Well, we all do it together. And I also, I'm very conscious of it right now in the middle of the COVID crisis. You know, we're coming up on the 1 year anniversary of the pandemic and how scary it was in March of last year to think that we wouldn't be able to deliver to our clients. And what if the city, what if the state shut us down? What if we had an infection? Were we risking our own health and our family's health by continuing to do the work? And the fact that a year later we figured out the protocols and, you know, never missed delivery and have grown by 45% based on
a credit to you and your team. I remember those fraught board meetings and board calls because it was pretty scary when it was happening and a lot had to happen fast. And again, that executive function came right out, David, and you figured it out. It was great.
I think that food has been so central to the pandemic too, because if we have privileges, we're worried about can we get our groceries delivered, can we get a slot for a delivery from Amazon or your local groceries, but imagine how tough that is when you can't get out of your home, you don't have a mask. You're already immune compromised and you're worried that the someone's going to bring the virus to you and your family and how frail and fragile you are. So continuing to be able to bring food to those people and say, we see you, you're not forgotten. We're going to not only bring you it, but we're going to keep you safe and we're going to bring a mask in the meal bag along with your food.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
It's really I don't generally go towards the spiritual, but it's a very powerful gift that we bring to people. I think my legacy is your legacy because I think we all have done this together over the past 30 years. I'm so proud of the people that I get to work alongside of. And the lessons they've taught me about, you know, what you and your business partner, Deborah Hughes, have shown me around hospitality and caring and silliness and laughter.
We always have a lot of that.
To do this good work together has been really special, hasn't it?
May we do it for many more years together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we still have a long road ahead of us, so we're going to keep doing more together. But Mary Catherine, I'm just so grateful to spend the time with you today and share
reminisce
happy memories, important memories, and also great pride of the impact we've had caring for people in the community who so need what we can offer them in terms of beautiful food and hospitality. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
That's great.